Welcome to another instalment. As regular listeners to Good Vibrations will be aware, the episodes have been pretty few and far between lately, and the reason for that is entirely down to the fact that my book, Musical Truth, has now dropped, and I'm doing a whole world of radio interviews, podcasts, and public talks to help promote the book. It feels like every other day I'm jumping on some radio show or other around the world to talk about it, and this has limited the amount of time that I can give to the regular Good Vibrations series. There's only so much a human can achieve in 24 hours, I guess, unless we get into the realms of transhumanism, but we won't go there. So Good Vibrations certainly will continue, and there are a bunch of guests I want to get on, so I will find a way of achieving that. But in the meantime, this is a volume that I put together very quickly, and I definitely wanted to get it out there in response to the devastating news of the passing of Prince just the other day. I certainly wanted to get into some of the more esoteric and occult aspects of Prince's life and career and music, and also to get into some of the strange elements of the official version that we've got of his death. Why would that even be a surprise to anyone that's been paying attention to stuff that goes on in the entertainment industry? This is actually one of two podcasts that I'm going to be doing on Prince. The second volume is going to be with a guy called Dan Munro, who I met through the Planet X radio show out of Liverpool 2 or 3 years ago. For the first one, it was a question of who to go to get into many of the symbolic aspects of Prince. And who would be better than the amazing American researcher known as Freeman? I've had him on before. Also, I wanted to get back my good friend Matt Sergiu of the Conspiro Media blog site. And we just wanted to do this while it was topical and fresh in people's minds. And we're really getting into all aspects of Prince today. So let's welcome along to Good Vibrations, or welcome back, I should say, Freeman, aka Freeman Fly. Hey, brother, welcome back.
Hey, good to be here, Mark.
Fresh from the Free Your Mind conference last weekend.
I was just going to say, I had such a great time at Free Your Mind. It was amazing. I think we're going to have to change the name from the Free Your Mind conference to the Free Your Mind gathering.
Indeed. Or Blow Your Mind, maybe.
Well, there you go, too. There was a lot of that going on.
And one day we must get Matt Sergiu of Conspiro Media, who's also on the line, to come over and check it out as well. Matt, welcome back.
Hello. I would love to. I'd love to pop along. I really would. One of these days it will happen, I'm sure.
We'll get you there. So you two are pretty much the kind of go-to guys for the subject we're going to be talking about today, which is like the rest of the planet slash flat plane, delete as appropriate, talking about Prince and the news of his death just a couple of days ago. So today I really want to get into some of the kind of esoteric aspects of Prince's life and his persona and his music, and also to get into, I guess, what you'd call some of the conspiratorial elements surrounding the news of his death, because there's lots of, as ever, anomalies, discrepancies, strange stuff when it comes to the stories we've been getting. So I'm looking to tackle all of that today. But first off, it's been said by a lot of people that 2016 is shaping up to be the year of the celebrity death cull, because there can't have been any other year where we've lost so many famous people this early on. It feels like every other day there's the news of some celeb that's died in some circumstance or other. Got the news of Billy Paul today, the soul singer at 81. And it's difficult, obviously, to say with any certainty whether all these deaths happened exactly as we're told by the mainstream media. That'd be a first, wouldn't it? Or whether there's any kind of foul play involved. I mean, what's going on? Why are so many famous people dying? Any ideas on that?
And so young, you know, if they hadn't have been so young, it would, you know, you would start to understand it. But there have been so many, especially we just had David Bowie go down and now Prince. Yeah. And both of these guys heavily involved in the occult. Hmm. but both of them very rogue. Okay, so so often when you say someone's involved with the occult, immediately in this paradigm that we're in, people are like, "Oh, evil, evil."
Yeah.
And I'm not one of those people, and I think that's the reason the Freeman perspective kind of took off, was that I was one of the first people, if not the first, to start discussing the occult aspects of our world in a, you know, not even just in a positive and negative manner, to understand that magic is part of our civilization.
Yeah. And you mentioned David Bowie there. I mean, the reaction to the news of Prince, to my mind, has actually eclipsed that of David Bowie. That's my perception of it. I think there's more people kind of upset about it, more people talking about it, more stuff all over social media. I don't know if you guys agree with that. I mean, I would never have thought that would be the case, but it does seem to have been even a bigger deal than David Bowie. I mean, do you agree with that?
Yeah, you're probably right. I think that's probably a generational thing. Hmm. I know David Bowie was massive in the 80s, especially when he released the Let's Dance album in 83. That kind of introduced him to a mainstream audience, as it were. That's certainly the way he saw it. But I think Prince was around in the 80s and a little bit into the 90s having hits. I think he was enjoying hits sort of closer to our time than David was. I think David Bowie was more for somebody from the 70s, if you like. I think that's when he really hit the mark. So I think it's probably a generational thing.
Yeah. We all knew David was going to die. Yeah. David knew he was going to die. He prepared all of this for his death. The album was set out to come out. So we knew he had cancer. We knew he was going to die. He knew he was going to die. With Prince, it's a shock. And I mean, his last Instagram post was just when you thought it was safe.
Yeah.
That's the last thing Prince said to the world. Mm. Right? So the shock of him dying is different, because with Bowie, at least we had a cause and we knew and he knew, and he prepared his final album to come out with this and his ritual video to go along with his death. I mean, all of for him, his death was planned to the day. So with Prince, him being found in an elevator at Paisley Park, this was a bit of a shock. Now, do you know that when Prince was speaking with his producer, he asked him one day, "Well, do you know what the elevator represents?" Now, see, the elevator was a big thing in Prince, and you'll find it in his Purple Rain album, and it's "Let's Go Crazy."
Yep.
And it says, "And if the elevator tries to bring you down, go crazy, punch a higher floor." Okay, so his producer, he's talking with him and says, "Do you know what the elevator represents?" And the producer's like, "No, I don't know." And he says, "The devil." Yeah. The elevator represents the devil.
This came out from L.A. Reid, didn't it? The music producer relayed this story.
Right.
I saw that yesterday.
And so, you know, now Prince is found in an elevator. We've got some mysteries behind his death. We have the strange landing of the jet. When he seemed to have flu-like symptoms. And honestly, if you take into account, I mean, all right, so he had $300 million, so maybe he didn't care if he landed his jet, but it cost a lot of money to land a jet and take off again. And this, to land for the flu is a bit bizarre. So the mystery landing of the jet was bizarre. Him then completing his concert and then dying, you know, after, all of that was quite bizarre.
What's most bizarre about that as well is just a day after, I think, that landing, he was at a concert in his hometown. And to quote, he said, "Wait a few days before you waste any prayers."
Exactly. What's that all about?
What does that mean? Wait a few days before you waste any prayers. And he was specifically dealing with rumours there that he was already dead.
And that's led to rumours that he was somehow aware of his imminent demise. It ties into that Twitter comment, you know, that there seems to be some foreknowledge of what was to come. If you take
there
those
was the logo, wasn't there, on Twitter? I don't know if you guys are aware of that. The logo on Twitter, he had the third eye. He had the sunglasses. I think they were
like
round discs covering his eyes and his third eye. And then I'm not too sure if it was just hours before he died or just a few hours after or before. the discs were gone from his eyes, and his eyes were closed, and his third eye was open. Twitter has reportedly said that that no such thing happened. That this is just a figment of everyone's imagination. But if you look around on Twitter long enough, you'll find pictures of it, of the actual, you know, the actual thing. So there you go, another little strange thing there.
Yeah. And whenever a prominent celebrity dies these days, there are three sort of schools of thought that always get peddled by various researchers. One is that in some way the death marked some kind of ritual sacrifice. And a lot of people roll their eyes the minute you mention something like that. But I think all of us have researched the music industry enough to know that ritual sacrifices do actually go on, unfortunately. I wish they didn't, but there's ample evidence to show that, you know, those that control these industries, these dark practitioners, occult practitioners, do tend to favour the odd sacrifice. Then the other option is that the artist in some way was able to fake their death, and they kind of retired the public persona, but the flesh and blood individual has gone off somewhere to live out their final days outside of the spotlight. And then the third option is that everything happened exactly as the mainstream media told us, and it was a terrible accident in the case of Prince. He just happened to collapse in an elevator after having the flu at the age of 57, and that's that. But again, that would be a first if it did actually happen the way BBC and CNN tell us. So there's usually these three kind of ways of addressing things, and I wonder if we're any closer to establishing which of those might be the case with Prince.
Well, you are correct, and when we look to the dates, of course, this April 19th to April 20th 21st era in time zone, there are so many seeming ritual sacrifices, and of course this is the time of the blood sacrifice to the beast, right? Starting in April 19th to May 1st, going up to Beltane, we have the blood sacrifice of the beast. Many people on the internet were already predicting and saying, okay, who's going to be the blood sacrifice for this April 19th, right? Because we had Waco happen in 93, April 19th. You had Oklahoma City bombing happening on April 19th. You had Columbine High School massacre, April 20th. You had Virginia Tech massacre, Boston Marathon explosion, fertilizer explosions in time. You know, you can go on and on with this date, going all the way back to, I guess, Hitler's birthday and the Queen's birthday, and all of this symbolism in there. Now, the first person I always go to when there is a seeming ritual sacrifice of a celebrity is Dr. Cyril White, and that is W-E-C-H-T. He is the pathologist that was involved with John F. Kennedy, Elvis, Michael Jackson. Well, he didn't do the autopsy. Let's stick to the ones he did the autopsy for, like Elvis, JFK, JonBenet Ramsey, Anna Nicole.
That's not you rustling your papers, is it, Matt? There's a sound of sort of rustling sound in the background.
No, not me.
Very strange.
I don't think it's me either.
Okay.
Just wondering what it is.
Yeah, I kind of heard that
too.
There
it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It must be the NSA.
It must be.
Well, Prince.
By the way, they just kicked me off of Facebook again. So anyone looking for me on Facebook, I'm going to start
Hey, I looked for you today, man.
Yeah, they kicked me again. They kicked me every so often. As soon as I start to get my friends list back up to where it was, they kick me off again. So
damn.
Just for everyone to know, I'm off Facebook again. So we're looking at Dr. Cyril White, and he was the person that got Michael Jackson's doctor charged with negligence. Like, he came out and was like, rah, rah, rah. And so everybody focused on Michael Jackson's doctor. I think it was Dr. Carter. I've been trying to remember his name. I should have looked it up. But, you know, no one was really looking at him so much, except for the idea that he was trying to resuscitate Michael on a bed, which no doctor would do. They would, you know, put him on. And the mystery of them running. Well, okay, who was that? Was it Heath Ledger when he was dying? Now, he did the ritual in Dr. Parnassus of the Hanging Man and the occult aspects inside of that, and then was warned not to take the role of the Joker because of its dangerous archetypal forces. And I remember when he died, it was Mary Kate Olsen or whatever that they called. You know, one of the Olsen twins instead of a doctor.
Right.
I mean, there's so many bizarre scenarios going around these deaths that you have to take so much in. So when I saw Dr. Cyril White come out on Prince, immediately he was, you know, describing the chilling details of all the different parts that they had removed out of Prince, and then went on to say, well, you know, it has to be a drug overdose. Now, he had no evidence. He had no they haven't done the data on the autopsy yet. He has no evidence, but everybody listens to Cyril White. He's on CNN. It's a drug overdose. Now, it may have been a drug overdose. We do find that Prince seems to have been doing a lot of opiates. I didn't think he did because he was a vegan.
Yep.
He was a health nut. You know, he was
a Jehovah's Witness.
So, you know, this whole opiate addiction thing, it's there and it's a very dangerous thing, but I don't know. Then we take into account that Prince was doing secret concerts. Okay, this is really a bizarre one that most people don't know about. I just happened to be there, so I know. The Rick Perry went off to the Bilderberger meeting in Istanbul. I'm with Alex Jones, bullhorning the mayor or the governor's mansion for being a traitor, for being in Istanbul with the Bilderbergers. So Rick Perry flies all the way back from Istanbul. Now, I've taken that flight, Mark. You've taken that flight. Not Istanbul, but I'll tell you, from London to America, right? Are you going to go out and party that night?
Personally, no.
It was what, 11, 15 hours flight?
Right.
Yeah. No, you're not going to go party. And now you're a governor and you've just met with the secret rulers of the world. You come all the way back to America from Istanbul and go to a secret Prince concert that evening?
Right.
No. But it was him and Mayor Will Wynn, Texas. And they both went to this secret Prince concert on 6th Street in downtown Austin, where they barricaded the whole front window of the bar so no one could see in. And Prince gave this secret concert for the governor and mayor that just returned from Bilderberg.
Right.
So there's plenty of mysteries here.
Oh, for sure. And many have commented that Prince dying on the Queen of England's 90th birthday goes beyond chance and coincidence, given that, you know, it's Prince, the Queen. And, you know, that's led to suggestions that he may have been some kind of ritual sacrifice to mark the occasion of the Queen. I mean, we often get this when it comes to the Queen of England. And you mentioned that the 19th of April is the start of that sacrificial ritual period leading up to Beltane. So, you know, the Queen of England does figure in this story, at least in terms of what people have been saying.
Most odd of all, there's a story that was that I found on the website for the Mirror, for the Daily Mirror newspaper in the UK. I'm not sure if you guys are aware of this. Niagara Falls on the Queen's 90th was illuminated purple.
Yes, I saw that.
Purple rain.
Wow. Okay. Let me throw in the purple symbolism then, because this one is very rarely known. We have a book, a collection of books from Kenneth Grant, who is the accolade who took over for Aleister Crowley in the OTO. Now, we know David Bowie was a major player in the OTO. This is the Ordo Templi Orientis, or the Eastern Templars. It is a magical order that has so much control over our mainstream music media, and even, I'm sure, Hollywood, but definitely in the music. You know that David Bowie, the Beatles, Rolling Stones, the list goes on and on, right? Of
Led
all the Zeppelin. People that follow Crowley.
Led Zeppelin, yeah.
Led Zeppelin, yeah. Jimmy Page lived in Crowley's house, blah, blah, blah. You know, over and over. You can see that the OTO has heavily influenced what comes out and is taught to the people in the music industry. So Kenneth Grant wrote a series of books called the Typhonian Trilogy. Now, Typhon is the Lord of the Abyss. He is Leviathan. He is all those things inside the Bible of what lives in the abyss. And this is a major symbolism that I have been covering from day one about the path up the tree of life and how you have to go through the abyss. And in the abyss are the fallen angels, the excrement, the clefot, and Leviathan or Typhon. So in the Typhonian trilogy, you learn that the OTO in the Typhonian OTO, their main purpose is communication with interdimensional beings, and that is the point and purpose of their magical rituals and blood sacrifices in the Typhonian order. Now, the area of Typhon inside of the abyss is known as the Mauv Zone. And if you look Mauve up, M-A-U-V-E, you'll find that it is pale purple. And this is the zone of the abyss, the zone of Typhon, the pale purple Mauve Zone. And so this purple rain could very well fall into this. As one more example of how this Mauve Zone symbolism was used in high-profile rituals, you go to Madonna, who is an obvious another practitioner of these high magics of Kabbalah. She's even going out to, say, Luria's grave in Israel and performing rituals at midnight with other rabbis. And she is heavily into, you know, this Kabbalic magic. And so when she came out on the Super Bowl, she literally stated that this would be a 33-minute Kabbalah ceremony that she'd be performing. And when she did, she displayed what Kenneth Grant in the Typhonian trilogy says is the mark of the beast, and that is the X-Men logo, the O and the X. Now, I've been harping on this for a long time, but it hasn't been picked up by the mainstream or even the conspiracy stream because no one reads these occult books so much, and they don't know that that is the mark of the beast, the X-Men logo, the X-Files logo, the Macintosh operating system logo. Over and over again, you're going to see this OX symbolism. That is the mark of the beast, according to these guys. And that same information, okay, so Madonna displayed that mark of the beast on the Super Bowl stage at least 20 times, more times than I could put in my artwork. I tried to show it over and over again so you could see this. And then realized that she's doing this very same symbolism of the Mauve Zone, of the abyss, of the mark of the beast, on the Super Bowl stage, and so now you got purple rain.
Yeah. So, Matt, just going back to what you were saying about Niagara Falls being illuminated in purple a day or two after Prince's announced death, it did strike me that they got all that organized pretty damn quickly, because you think about the logistics that would have been involved in arranging that, and they got it all done within, you know, a couple of days of Prince's announced death. So pretty good work there.
Yeah. And sometimes I wonder what game the mainstream media is playing in all this, because sometimes they're being a little bit too welcoming with the news. Do you guys get that impression that these days the mainstream media is very, very quick to jump on the conspiracy theory, quote unquote? And I just sometimes wonder whether they're doing this to test us out, to see how many people are reading this stuff and what the comments are at the bottom of the page, or I don't know what's going on, whether they're trying to lead us down a dead end. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, you have to wonder. Yeah, you have to wonder about that.
Whether they're testing us out here, because back in the day, you know, even 5, 10 years ago, this kind of stuff, you know, the Niagara Falls thing, it wouldn't have been reported in the way that it was reported in the Mirror. They're actually making the point of telling you that Prince and the Queen and Purple Rain and all this kind of stuff. And they're mixing it all together and making a headline out of it.
Yeah.
5, 10 years ago, would you have got that? I'm not so sure you would have. Now, whether this is because they're noticing that more and more people are sort of waking up to this kind of thing, or whether they're trying to steer us towards a dead end, I don't know what's going on. But I do feel as though they're playing with our minds a little bit. I was just wondering, actually, what your thoughts are on this. We've had Prince die, we've had Whitney Houston die, we've had Michael Jackson die. Those are three of four of what you would call the biggest acts of the 80s. There were four main big acts of the 80s. Three of them are gone, and now we've got Madonna left. Exactly. Any thoughts on that?
Let me throw in there. Whitney Houston. Now, that was truly bizarre, because she seemed to be sacrificed on a ritual day to the goddess of waters. And now what most people didn't realize was that her daughter died in the bathtub, or almost died in the bathtub, before Whitney did.
Yeah.
In the exact same bathtub. She was rushed off to the hospital and then came back to the hotel to find her mom dead, and then had a complete breakdown and was rushed back to the hospital again.
Yeah.
Then she ends up drowning again later, right? That really seemed like a profile ritual murder. And then you have Anna Nicole, or no, it was Whitney Houston, and she was held in the hotel during the Grammy Awards, I think it was.
Yeah, the Clive and Davis party.
Yeah, the Clive Davis party. They wouldn't allow her body to be removed from the building, although it could have been removed long before the party started, and they forced everybody to party in the building with her just a couple of floors above them.
Sure.
That was bizarre.
Yeah.
Chaka Khan actually was at that party, and she talked about her disgust, basically. Just a point here, Clive Davis was a very good friend of Prince's as well. Actually handled one or two of his albums after the fiasco with Warner Brothers when he left and became Symbol and called himself Slave. Yeah. Clive Davis, interestingly enough, stepped in to help Prince with his career at that point. So I don't know if that's got any relevance at all. Maybe we'll find out in future. But
Clive Davis was Bobby Christina's godfather, apparently.
And just back to the elevator thing, because if you actually read that piece from Let's Go Crazy, from Prince's track Let's Go Crazy, if you actually read that piece in full, it seems like there's some kind of quote-unquote prediction. He sings, "You better live now before the Grim Reaper come knocking on your door. Tell me, are we going to let the elevator bring us down?" So when you read that in full, it's almost like a foreboding. It's kind of...
Yeah, I was looking at those lyrics earlier, and it starts off saying, "Dearly beloved, we're gathered here today to get through this thing called life."
Get through this thing called life.
To the afterworld.
Electric word, life, it means forever.
It means forever, that's
a
mighty long time.
But
I'm
going to
tell you, there's something else. The afterworld.
The afterworld.
The world, never ending, and so on. Yeah.
Matt, just going back to The Color Purple that we were discussing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this one, but I was reading a mainstream newspaper article today about Prince's Paisley Park complex, on which he was allegedly found dead. And the article stated that apparently there was a pyramid on the roof.
There is, yes.
Of this complex. And it's said to glow purple whenever Prince is present on the complex.
Oh, I see. I've got a picture of this. Shame we're not on TV, as it were.
Hmm.
But anyone can find this. Just type in Paisley Park Studios and just look on images or whatever. But yeah, there's... I haven't got the picture in front of me now, but I think there's four pyramids, and one of them is separate from the other three. It's on a separate part of the complex. If you take a look at the pyramid, you actually have the capstone at the top. It's a glass pyramid on the roof. It's not very big. It just covers a certain section of the roof. But if you look on the top, it does have the capstone. So I would assume from what you're saying that the light that comes on probably comes onto the capstone part. But yeah, there are four, as I can recall, I think, four glass pyramids, and one of them is separate to the other three, and it's got a capstone on the top as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and purple is a colour that's always been associated with Prince, not least through his Purple Rain album and movie, which is a great movie, by the way, very much overlooked. And purple, alongside gold, is one of the principal colours associated with Saturn, interestingly. And we know that the music industry and the entertainment industry generally is controlled by a Saturn-worshipping death cult. So kind of interesting in that context. I'm sure there's loads more we could say about purple, but that's just one context that you find
Prince
it in.
He did release a load of tracks with gold references. I mean, the one that strikes to my mind at this moment is the single Gold, All That Glitters Is Gold.
Right.
And he used to wear a lot of gold as well. He was...
I can't seem to think of who it is. Maybe you guys can help me. It'll come to me eventually, and for some reason my brain's drawn a blank, but the ancient order that created purple using the cypress trees and purple cloth at that time, with the creation of the color purple and a cloth like that, was worth its weight in gold. Now for some reason I can't think of the order that was in charge of purple. And they were the ones that gave the queen purple. That's why purple was such a big deal. It was such an impossible color that it was worth its weight in gold. You could trade purple cloth for gold equally. Mm. I'll think of the name. God, I can't believe I can't think of that.
So when you've got artists like Prince and very much David Bowie, and their whole persona, their whole, you know, image is very much steeped in this esoteric kind of symbolism and all this stuff going back to ancient orders and such, you have to wonder whether this is coming from the artists themselves, whether they're just this worldly, creative, bohemian kind of individual that researches all this stuff and incorporates it into what they do, or if they're instructed by their industry overlords to include it in their album sleeves and their stage shows and stuff, you know, whether it's coming from higher forces, so to speak.
It's a tricky one. It's one of those mysteries that I personally, it's one of those things that keeps me moving and looking at different things and different various bits of research and so on. And I can't say I've
Prince,
answered
when
to
Prince
that.
Came out with Purple Rain, he was a young guy. He was like 23 when he recorded that album. So you think to yourself, would a guy of 23 have had the opportunity in his life to really research the significance of these colours and these symbols and to incorporate it in his work? You know, it's a very young age. Well, it's possible, I guess, but...
Yeah, I mean, I've found from my own experience, and I can't prove this, all I can do is just look at pictures and photographs and interviews of various people, but referring to the Beatles, for example, there is certainly evidence to suggest, we're going back to the 1950s now, there's certainly evidence to suggest that the Beatles, way before they were famous and way before they were even called the Beatles, when they were just four friends in Liverpool scraping by, trying to get together to play a gig here or a gig there and a coffee bar here and a coffee bar there. Mm. There is certainly evidence to suggest that that time that they were in tune with certain occult aspects, just from some of the symbols they drew on some of the walls in some of the clubs that they worked in when they were, you know, 15, 16 years old. And you have to ask yourself, how did they gain this knowledge? Was it a natural thirst on their part from just a natural interest that they just picked up? Mm. Or was there someone there to guide them along?
Or are they channeling it from out in the ether somewhere?
Which that's is another right.
This is
that's
the way
right.
I see it. When you are dealing with culture, you can think of cultures as a bacteria plate that you grow things in, right? And so what they have done is that these higher orders of the Ordo Templi Orientis and the Freemasonic orders and the corporate heads have established a culture for the occult to grow. And so you don't have to manufacture Marilyn Manson. You just need to develop the culture that Marilyn Manson can rise in. And so these people that are deep into this. Yeah, it's culture creation, you know. It they allow that to grow into what it is, and making sure that these are the people that make it to the top. But at the same time, there is a very real situation to the channeling of these muses and archetypal forces, and using these magical practices to become a virtuoso. You know, we always have the example of Robert Johnson meeting the devil at the crossroads, and he couldn't play a lick until he met with the devil. But you have these archetypal forces. This is what these people are trying to make communication with. And, you know, you get a virtuoso like Prince, who's capable of playing 35 different instruments and, you know, with perfection. You know, is it talent? You know, talent, you start to look at that. Where'd you start to look these things up? You look up anything to deal with acting and actors, and you realize that it's channeling, and that is the real true purpose, that they would channel the gods and perform the gods on stage. That was the purpose of actors. I did have to go look up the color purple, and I want to finish that real fast because it's so important. It was of Tyre, the land of Tyre. Now, when you are in a Freemasonic order and you perform your ritual, you are performing the ritual of Hiram Abiff, who is from Tyre. And Tyre plays heavily into this whole occult story. And it was the Phoenicians in Tyre, the Mediterranean sea snails, to create the color purple. And that was when it became so valuable. But it was the Phoenicians and their magical order of Tyre that plays heavily into this whole Masonic story. And that's where purple comes from.
I just wanted to get your take on something that, now that we're talking about entities or forces taking somebody over, as it were, because there's certainly evidence to show that Prince was in some way being controlled within by something. And I don't know if it's MK Ultra, if it's something more occult. I really don't know what to think. So I just like to put this to you guys about possession, as it were. Prince had many alter egos. I mean, I could reel off a whole load of names. You've got Tora Tora, which was a character who used to, where he would wear a hat with a veil which covered his face. And there was also a character called Spooky Electric. Now, this is very interesting, Spooky Electric. He was like this demonic figure. Okay, if you look, I actually was rummaging around some old stuff last night, trying to remember some of the old days from Prince. I went to one of his concerts at Wembley when it was, I think it was the Love Sexy Tour, 88, 89. And I was looking.
I went there too.
Was it 89, 80, 88, sometime like that?
Yeah, 89, I think.
Yeah. And I was looking through the programme and I came up with, I came across, it's like a lyric, but it's referring to this Spooky Electric character. And apparently he's one of Prince's alter egos. He's the evil alter ego. And he takes over another of Prince's alter egos, who's like this he-she character, who's called Camille. Now, Camille's very interesting. You can hear Camille, quote unquote, on the track If I Was Your Girlfriend, which is, I think, on the Sign of the Times album. If you listen to that album towards the end, you hear that Prince's voice is sped up to make it higher pitched, almost female. That's Camille. So Prince is basically having a duet with this alter ego.
He also had a female rapper called Cat that appeared on Alphabet Street, and it was basically Prince under another alter ego playing the part of a female, similar to Camille.
That's right.
There's another one.
So with relation to Camille and Spooky Electric, basically, just to round it up here, basically, do you remember he was going to release an album called The Black Album?
Yeah.
Prince was going to release an album called The Black Album sometime in around 87, 88, and then he pulled back and decided not to release it. The reason he gave for that later on was because he thought it was too dirty, it was too erotic, he was trying to go in a different direction. And having listened to the album, it is pretty gritty stuff. But if you read the programme, basically what he's telling us is this Spooky Electric alter ego that he has, this demonic feature, took over his other alter ego, Camille, and convinced Camille not to go... it's very difficult. Basically, Camille came to this realisation that to fall under the spell of Spooky Electric and his mind-controlling beats, such as were in the album, The Black Album, would be the wrong thing to do. And the best way was to promote religion, was to promote love. And out of that came Love Sexy. Now, whether any of this is to do with alter egos in MKUltra, whether it's something from a higher plane, I don't know. But I'm just putting it out there just to see what you guys think.
Yeah, I'm getting echoes of Beyonce and Sasha Fierce and Eminem and Slim Shady.
There are so many. There's another one. One of his bandmates from 85 said sometimes he went under the name of Steve. And basically it was this scruffy guy who used to walk around and swear a lot. And you had to refer to him as Steve. And I'll just round off with this, and then because I want to see where to go with this, so I'll just get your take on it. But he said to Oprah Winfrey in an interview that he'd known from about the age, through therapy, he'd found out that from about the age of 5, he thinks he's had 2 personalities inside him. That's all he had to say about that. So he's known that since about the age of 5, he's had 2 personalities within him.
Yeah, again and again we see this. We saw the strange transformation of Beyonce as she went on stage at the Super Bowl looking like the Hulk. A lot of people made a lot of comments on that. And of course she had her sub-characters of Yonce and, as you said, Sasha Fierce. Sasha Fierce obviously wasn't fierce enough, so Yonce had to step in there. And Britney, of course, had multitude of personalities, British Britney, Satanic Britney, all of the different Britneys, the Southern Britney.
Nicki Minaj and, with Roman Zelensky, Lady Gaga with Joe Calderone.
Nicki Minaj is a virtual dictionary of alter egos, isn't she?
Eminem and realized that he died and came back and then had Slim Shady.
Prince, you know, these... was pretty much the same when he came out with the symbol. He was telling people that Prince is dead.
And he was epileptic as a child, and some miracle seemed to have saved him.
Yeah.
Prince.
We're hearing that. Abusive childhood as well. Apparently, as well.
Now, that's the other key ingredient to all of this, right, is the abuse that we see from each and every one of these celebrities, Anna Nicole, Marilyn Monroe, you know, go on up. They all have been abused. Michael Jackson.
Well, actually, I've noticed a lot of parallels between Prince and Michael Jackson. I mean, they were both born in 1958, of course. They both had abusive fathers. Prince's home life is documented in the Purple Rain movie, which is autobiographical. They both got into music at an incredibly early age, and they've both showed signs of multiple personalities, as we discussed. So a lot of parallels there. And you had Prince, Madonna, and Michael Jackson all born in 1958. And we just have Madonna, the high priestess of the industry, left. But I suppose what we're trying to establish here is, are we talking about trauma-based mind control? Are we talking about some kind of demonic possession?
Or, that's right.
Or is it a combination of the both?
Yeah, I was going to say, or all the above.
Yeah.
We don't know, but we definitely have enough evidence to say that that seems to be the case. And we can even use prime examples. Like, I carry with me Fritz Springmeier with Cisco Wheeler's book, How to Create an Undetectable Illuminati Mind Control Slave. And in these tomes that Cisco Wheeler and Fritz Springmeier have compiled, they have a whole list of triggers and signs and symbols that will be used in these type of mind control techniques, you know, different hand signs, gestures, colors, and weird things. Okay, so here we see Britney Spears. And if you watch Britney Spears videos in chronological order, you get quite a tale. I mean, she's, you know, fighting off Men in Black. She's blowing up her own clone lab. You know, all these things that go on in Britney Spears' storyline is crazy. Britney puts out her video where she's standing in front of the press and she's about to reveal her secrets, you know, all of these things with the Men in Black and the clone labs. This isn't one of her music videos. And she's standing up there about to speak to the press. And Guillermo from Weeds, the TV series Weeds, he's in the video as well. And he walks up to her and he opens his hand and gives her a handful of seashells. And she then just shuts up, doesn't say anything to the press, walks out of the room with Guillermo, turns around, and he has these demonic red eyes in the video. Now, so what we do is we run to Fritz and Cisco's book, How to Create Your Own Undetectable Illuminati Mind Control Slave, great title, and flip to seashells. And what does it say? Well, of course, they're in there. And there they are saying, this is a sign to the mind control slave that we are watching your every move, that we listen to everything you say. Everything you say is heard. That's the symbol of the seashell. You are being listened to by us. And so when he gives her those and she shuts up and doesn't say, you know, speak to the press, that was a clear sign. There are a lot of signs and symbols that we pull out like this. Like we were able to predict what Katy Perry would do at the Super Bowl. No one could do this. We did it live on the air and had it out a month before it actually occurred at the Super Bowl. So what is Katy Perry going to do at the Super Bowl for her high-profile ritual? Well, let's see. They are working on this whole ISIS, Jaqanah, Shekinah, death of the mother symbolism, and the Whore of Babylon and the rise of the Whore of Babylon in this symbolism. So these are quite obvious, you see, to those that are symbolically literate. And so when we said Katy Perry will come out on a cat-like beast holding the reins with a fire chalice, and you're like, holy hell, how do you know that? And then I throw in it will be a diamond. There will be diamonds involved in this as well, because when you look in Springmeier's book, you'll see that diamonds are a symbol of the presidential model mind control slave victims, which Katy Perry would very much be one of those levels. And it is also a symbol, the diamond, to trigger the sleeper agents, the mind control victims that don't know they're mind control victims. So the diamond symbolism was huge in this. So we said she'd come out on a cat-like beast using diamond symbolism, holding the reins with some sort of fire chalice. Now, the reason we knew this was because two magicians, L. Ron Hubbard, who created Scientology, and Jack Parsons, who created NASA and Jet Propulsion Laboratories, were doing rituals to Pan and to these gods and goddesses while launching nuclear rockets into the atmosphere or detonating them on the ground. Meanwhile, they were performing moonchild rituals. They were trying to raise Leviathan. They were doing all these type of rituals with Scientology and NASA, okay? They performed a ritual to channel the Whore of Babylon, and they described her. And guess what the description was? She came out on a cat-like beast. She was holding the reins. She had a fire chalice. All right, so it was the exact description of what Katy Perry would do. We gave this out live before the Super Bowl and then live during the Super Bowl, and we had the tarot card of Aleister Crowley's deck, the Thoth deck, of the Lust card, and that is also the same depiction of this Whore of Babylon holding the reins, riding this lion beast. But of course, the lion beast was made into diamonds. And so you can see that we correctly to the T predicted what Katy Perry would do live on stage. So this should be evidence to you that this is all real.
And you can imagine them looking at your site and watching the video going, damn, Freeman's got it sussed, man. Do we go ahead with it? Yeah, we've invested too much. Let's still press ahead. Nobody will notice.
Yeah. No, I am very marginalized, guys. I am very marginalized. I am banned from coast to coast. My YouTube videos, if I put anything of value into it, they are banned worldwide. I am very marginalized. That's why I rely very heavily on listeners sharing my work. Because if you don't, no one's ever going to see it. As you see, they just dropped me off Facebook again. Yeah. Anything I put on YouTube is banned worldwide. You can have it on your channel. You could take that video I have banned on my channel, put it up on yours, no problem. There are videos that way that other people have up that I can't put up on my own channel, my own work. And so I am very marginalized. And I think it's because I do have this deeper knowledge into this occult sciences, and I haven't been wrong yet. I predicted 10/13 as the next 9/11 on Alex Jones, but who noticed? You know, I'm making these world shattering predictions, and you'd think you would have heard about it by now, right?
Well, they do say if you're copping the flak, you're over the target. So take it as flattery.
Oh, I do. Yeah, I definitely a badge of honor that they will not have me on coast to coast.
Yeah, for sure.
On the subject of 9/11, I've just remembered something. Were you aware that Prince was allegedly predicted 9/11?
Yes, in that famous 1998 concert.
That's right.
Okay, same book, folks. Same thing I've been talking about from beginning to end. I told you about the Kenneth Grant and the Typhonian trilogy. The exact same book has a chapter 11 or the one after 10. And there is an entire chapter in the Satanic Works on the numbers 9/11. I don't know if you guys know this, but I predicted 9/11 using this very occult science.
I had heard that, yeah.
Yeah, and it was because I didn't know what was going to happen quickly. I'll tell you the story quickly. I knew because Tom Ridge was already Homeland Security head. There was no Homeland Security Department. So they had to make a Homeland Security Department, and the bill came up every October 1st. Everybody said, hell no, that's completely unconstitutional. This was during Bill Clinton. So when they forced the W into office, as I predicted, W is a symbol of the Clefot, of the abyss, of this very same symbolism I have not deterred from in its entire conversation. So W, I predicted, would be forced into office because he was the symbol of the fallen angels, the Kleefaut, the abyss. That's what W means. That's what Hitler's VW meant. All of this, all right? And so I was able to predict that using the occult symbolism. Then I said, okay, this obviously will be the year that they do a massive terrorist attack to cause this Homeland Security bill to finally pass. And so I saw that it comes in October. So therefore, they needed the terrorist attack to happen 2 weeks before it, I guessed, for public reaction time. Then I started to, well, first I was clued into the numbers 9/11 by George H.W. Bush giving his New World Order speech on 9/11/1990.
Yeah.
I got deeper into this numerology. I studied Kenneth Grant. I understood now that the number 9 is the most satanic number known to anyone because it's selfish. And Satanism is all about selfishness. That is its core ingredient. And 9, no matter how many times you multiply it, adds back to itself, right? So that's a selfish number. 10, the 1 and the 0, this is the hermaphrodite. 10 is Kether, the head of the tree of life, the representation of heaven, God, and all that's divine. The unity, the 1 and the 0, the male and the female. 11 is the next step above that when you become the magician. It's the base of the new tree. It's the next level of Malkuth or Earth. And that's when you become a magician, because now you're on a higher plane in your tree of life, or you're one tree up. And but if you skip 10, if you go from 9 to 11, then you skip the divine and you are now a sorcerer working from a selfish intent of 9, using the divine powers without the 10 or God within your symbolism. So I told everyone there's going to be a major terrorist attack. It's going to happen on 9/11 due to this symbolism. And I said, don't freak out. This is all for your reaction. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to really harp on this is because Barack Obama seemingly has just come forward. Now, Barack Obama, let's just get that clear. Barack means lightning in Hebrew. Bama means from the heights. So lightning from the heights is the description of Satan in the Bible. Let's just keep that clear. And he's coming forward on 9/11, just as Putin did. And many others like Milosevic and Chavez, right? This is what I meant when I was making the prediction. Don't freak out. This is for your reaction. Because if we come forward as Americans and say 9/11 was an inside job, then you are destroying your own nation from within. And if you really had a conception of what's going on planet Earth and what George H.W. Bush had said with his New World Order, this is a globalist job that wants you blaming your own nation's government to make us look like Satan to the rest of the world. And we are doing their work for them.
Well,
there you go.
Mind blowing.
I've got the quotes here of the concert where he said it. It's in the Netherlands. You can find it on video, actually. It's on the internet. It's widely available. He says, I've got to get back to America. I've got to get ready for the bomb. Osama bin Laden getting ready to bomb. Osama bin Laden getting ready to bomb. America, you better watch out. 2001, hit me. There you go.
Yeah.
1998.
I mean, the 2001 reference at the end is the clincher, isn't it? Because without there's plausible deniability until he says 2001. You know, why would he say that?
And bin Laden, you know.
And why would he say bin Laden?
Yeah.
Now, you know, let's realize again that bin Laden had my library. When you saw bin Laden's reading list and it was Jekyll Island, it was Fritz Springmeier, The Bloodlines of the Illuminati, go check out bin Laden's reading list. And it is a very heavy conspiracy reading list. Now, take into account that the bin Laden construction company was one of the main construction companies building the Twin Towers, and that the bin Ladens asked the architect, I have them live on air, where to put the demolition charges when they wanted to destroy the Twin Towers. He was doing this with the bin Ladens before the buildings were built. I have him on record saying this. It was the bin Laden construction company that built the Twin Towers. Of course, the bin Ladens were the only people that were allowed to fly on 9/11. Huh. Yeah. How strange is that, right? And, you know, so was bin Laden Osama a hero or a villain?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that he was a totally innocent man when it came to 9/11. And he's been demonized as, you know, the criminal of the century, whereas in fact, he didn't do anything. The real criminals lie elsewhere.
I should say hero or victim, yes.
Yeah, for real. Just taking it back to, if we accept the mainstream version of the news of Prince's death, then a lot of people have been jumping on what might have been not the mainstream version, but the conspiracy version, which was that he was taken out for some reason. A lot of people have been speculating on what the reason could have been for that. And of course, people have brought up the spat that he had with Warner Brothers Records, his label, in the 90s, where he kind of fell foul of them over publishing and royalties deals. And that led to him adopting that strange symbol as his artist name, and then becoming known as the artist formerly known as Prince. And he appeared in public with Slave written over his face. And a lot of people think that, you know, when you get into a high profile argument with a big, powerful corporation such as that, your days are going to be numbered. And I'm mindful of Michael Jackson with the public comments he made about the Sony Corporation, describing them as evil and Tommy Mottola as the devil and such. So, you know, people have put that forward as a motive. And according to a mainstream newspaper article that I was reading today, they state that there exists enough unreleased Prince material to allow for a new album every year for the next 100 years. I suspect that may be exaggerating a bit, but what they're stating is that whoever controls Prince's publishing now stands to become very rich in the years ahead, because there's just an unending archive of material that can be put out there, previously unreleased. And so a lot of skeptics who reject any kind of dark occult elements to what happens in the music business, we all know these people, you know, they scoff at the idea that there could be all this unseen spiritual dark stuff going on, and they say it's strictly about money, it's all business. And so these people would say they got rid of Prince because of the money, because we've all heard the old adage that a dead artist is worth more to a corporation than a living one. Any thoughts on that?
Well, according to mainstream reports, again, apparently Prince got his master tapes back from Warner Brothers in 2014. So whether this has any relevance, I have no idea who's going to inherit the money, who's going to inherit his estate, and who's going to inherit this music now. Right. Apparently there isn't a will, which is something I've read. There is no will. So apparently what will happen is it'll just get automatically handed over to his estate and to living heirs to be shared out amongst them.
He had no children, right?
He had no children. This is very, again, veering off into something very, very strange here. He had two children, both who died. And this was with Mate, right. A lady he met when she was 16. But he didn't marry her until she was he married her when she was 22. Again, this is a very odd episode in his life that could raise a lot of raises a lot of question marks for me.
Yeah,
she was a belly dancer at the age of three. She comes from a family that pushed her into the limelight at a very, very early age. Belly dancing at the age of three, okay? And her father was a major in the Air Force. The US Air Force.
Military intelligence connections again.
Military intelligence connections again. So, and she was also the voice piece for one of his alter egos, the Tora Tora alter ego, which is the alter ego where he used to wear a cap and he used to have a veil over his face. There's footage, you probably remember it from back in the day. It was back in sort of mid-1990s where he wouldn't speak directly to a TV interviewer. He'd have Mate speak. He would whisper to Mate what he wanted to say, and Mate would be his interpreter.
Right.
So when you jumble all this stuff together, it's a little bit, you know.
Very strange.
But yeah, they had a child who died a week after he was born from a rare skull disorder, I think it was, called Pfeiffer syndrome.
Yeah.
I think it's called. And another child was born, I think, before another child died before it was born with Mate as well. So there's no living heirs on that side. But he's got sisters, he's got cousins, he's got family that work for him at Paisley Park, part of his family. But it's still early days. But I just find it very interesting that he did get the rights back to his master tapes, which gives him full power over his back catalogue. So he can do whatever he wants. He got that back in 2014. We had the same with Michael Jackson, as you say. Michael Jackson, in that speech where he calls Tommy Mottola the devil back in 2001, 2002. The big issue with Michael Jackson is he owned the rights to the Beatles music. And he was, without getting into the, because it's if you read through all of the sort of the technical stuff that to do with the rights and the deals and how, what happened and where it happened, it gets very, very technical. But in a nutshell, basically, Michael Jackson had power over, ownership over probably the most lucrative, valuable songwriting copyright you could ever hope to have, which is the Lennon and McCartney songbook, worth billions apparently. And now Sony have bought it back from the Jackson estate since his death. So whether there's any correlation between, you know, if there's anything to do with Michael with Prince, sorry, getting his getting the rights back to his master tapes and then his sudden death, I don't know. I really don't know. I was looking here actually for a quote that Prince said about the music industry, and he was very, very acidic in his words towards the music industry, in his and a lot of his lyrics. I mean, I can't find the quotes at the minute. Just paraphrasing, what he said was, he likened the music industry to the mafia. He says, "Why do you think we get terms like hits and up the charts like a bullet? It's because we're working for gangsters here. These people think they run the world." This is paraphrasing. This is basically what he said. And just to finish off, I don't know if you guys are aware of this. It's taken from a website called EmpireHerald.com. And I know this website has been held up as, quote unquote, a spoof website. But I just want to read a quote. It's been attributed to somebody called Adonis G, who is, this article claims, an insider, a Prince insider. Okay, this is what he said in a story that was just put up online a couple of days ago. He says, "Prince was so excited for finally winning the battle with his former label over the rights to his music. He'd thrown a little get together to celebrate the victory. Myself and a couple of other close friends were at the studio when Prince got four anonymous calls back to back, making threats against his life. That night he got the calls, he thought it was just a prank. But that following day, he got a video recording of us outside the studio the night he got the initial calls. Prince started getting really scared. A few of us tried to convince him to get security, but he said he wasn't going to let the threats stop him from living." As I say, this is from a so-called spoof website, but right. I don't know.
And when does that story purport to be from?
That's just from a couple of days ago.
Right, okay.
April the 21st, I think it was.
Right. So when it comes to supposed motives for getting rid of Prince, if you go for that version of events, there's been a whole bunch of memes that have hit the internet over the past couple of days. You've probably seen them. And they're quotes that apparently were made by Prince. And he's supposed to be speaking out about all sorts of things from, there's one where he was supposedly criticising the genocidal Jews and saying he won't play in Israel because he doesn't like the Jews. And then there's another one where he's supposed to have spoken out about the depopulation agenda. And it does make me think that probably some of these memes are people just making up these quotes and attributing them to him rather than quotes that you can find genuinely from interviews, but people are coming up with all kinds of things that he's supposed to have said that would have incurred the wrath of these overlords, these controllers, and given a reason to get rid of him. I mean, have you come across any of these?
I was just going to mention the chemtrails one in the interview.
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, that's a genuine one. There is the video that you can still get on YouTube where in an interview, I think it was 2011, he brought up chemtrails spontaneously. And celebrities aren't supposed to do that.
That really hit the record and put him as a mark for sure as, you know, being one of the celebrity truthers, if you will. And you do get marginalized the moment you come out and the moment you get involved in anything that's outside of their purview. Yeah, I did. I don't know anything. I was going to bring it up the same thing just to say that we know that at least he was informed enough to speak on chemtrails and to say that it was driving his friends crazy and make people beat up on each other.
He referred to 9/11 in one of his songs as well, that it was turning people against Muslims. Muslims were getting blamed for something that wasn't their fault. I can't remember the name of the song, and I might be paraphrasing a little bit. I think the name of the song was Cinnamon Girl. Here we are. I've got it here. Cinnamon Girl of mixed heritage never knew the meaning of colour lines. 9/11 turned all that around when she got accused of this crime. She began the mass illusion, war on terror alibi. Now, that's interesting.
Yeah, you know, Michael Jackson was in debt to Abdullah bin Hamad. And that really confused everyone when he died. And they were like, why is this Abdullah, King of Bahrain's son, demanding the money? He sued Michael Jackson over the money. And so after all of that, Michael Jackson was in debt to Abdullah, even though he seemed to have, you know, hundreds of millions. And then when you go to Anna Nicole and the birth of Daniel Lynn and little Danny Lynn, now Anna Nicole was married to a 90-year-old Nazi oil tycoon who had $90 million or $1 billion, something of that. And they were all like, well, who gets the money? Who gets the money? And they thought, of course, that it would go to Daniel Lynn, but it just kind of hung in this escrow. And there was a whole battle there that they had over ownership of Danny Lynn after Anna Nicole died. But still, the money was this massive mystery, and to my knowledge, no one has received that money from the Nazi oil tycoon. But it's, you know, it's truly bizarre when you start to take into who might have birthed Daniel Lynn, because the person that claims to be the father of Anna Nicole's child is Prince Frederick von Anhalt, and Prince Frederick von Anhalt keeps Zsa Zsa Gabor locked up in the mansion with a padlock. This is open news. This is not mystery. This is, you can go read the stories and People or whatever. Just check out Prince Frederick. And he claims that he impregnated Anna Nicole. Now, the story behind Prince Frederick is that he's actually a genetically crafted Hitler's child using the egg of Gretel Braun, Eva Braun's sister, with the semen of Hitler that was saved, which produced Prince Frederick von Anhalt, which then would make Daniel Lynn, Anna Nicole's daughter, the granddaughter of Hitler.
And that's like the plot line to the movie Boys from Brazil, right?
Exactly. That's the truth. That's the truth, right?
Yeah.
So exactly. And so then, you know, having Anna Nicole married to a dying billionaire Nazi oil tycoon to leave the money to Hitler's granddaughter, through Prince Frederick, granddaughter, Prince Frederick von Anhalt. So, you know, this is how weird these stories get.
Yeah, weird stuff.
There's always
indeed.
Money tied in, isn't there? There's always this money trail. There's always a stash of money to be waiting at the end of the death. I seem to find with these things, which certainly Michael Jackson's case and possibly in Prince's as well, was too early to say, of course. But
and there's usually military intelligence connections as well, everywhere you look.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to add, I don't know if you were aware, Prince did confirm he was writing his memoirs. He confirmed this in March this year, according to BBC News. And they were set to be released next year. So whether that has any relevance, again, I don't know.
Interesting.
But it's certainly.
It really did seem like. Yeah, it seemed like he knew his life was in danger, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Reminds me of Mel Evans, who was connected to the Beatles, and he was said to have been poised to publish his memoirs, spilling the beans on his years with the Beatles, and he just happened to get shot up by LA cops the day before
under
the manuscript was due to go to the publisher.
Very suspicious circumstances, yeah.
Yeah.
Most people who knew Mel Evans would say he was a gentle giant. He only lost his temper when need be, in defence. To defend the Beatles, as it were, when he was a bodyguard. Another interesting thing, don't want to get too much into the Beatles, of course, but Neil Aspinall, who was the Beatles' former roadie, he was back with them in the days of the Cavern and stayed with them right through, and eventually became the head of Apple. the record label that the Beatles launched in 68, 69. And he carried on after the split and after Apple went through its financial collapse, basically. He stayed with Apple right until the 2000s. And he was about to write his memoirs. He'd never, ever... He was very secretive about the Beatles, very protective of their private lives, and was very, very... wasn't friendly to interviewers, wasn't up for that kind of thing. But he was about to write his memoirs, and then he died of a heart attack.
Like you do.
Like you do. So, again, I'm just putting it out there and see what you think, you know.
Well, so many tangents to all this, you know. That's why these conversations can go on for 6 hours, if you're not careful, because there's so many different avenues you can go down. Freeman, I had wanted to ask you about the symbol that Prince adopted as his name for a brief period. What did you interpret that symbol as? What is the meaning of that?
Okay, when you get down to the roots of all of this, you get the hermaphrodites. And so you go back to ancient Rome, Greece, and you find that the belief was that there were hermaphrodites that split into male and female parts. So as I was speaking of the 10 and the unity of 1 and 0, the unification of male and female, that's what Prince's symbol was. It was the hermaphrodite symbol, and that really is at the apex of this transhumanist agenda. We have Angelina Jolie now removing all female parts from her body, right? Very bizarre turn there. But Madonna, in her, again, the Super Bowl performance, standing as Baphomet is one of the most commonly known hermaphroditic symbols that people see. If you notice that the Baphomet has boobs, but then also has the phallus of the caduceus below. So that's where this all comes in. So he was playing upon this unification of the male-female forces and being a hermaphrodite.
And again, that raises the question of whether an artist would have come up with that concept themselves, you know, as an independent thing, or whether he would have been given it or channeled it from somewhere, you know. Same question.
I was just going to say very briefly that it seems to dip into this alter ego aspects of Prince's life, because a lot of the alter egos were, you weren't sure if they were male or female, like the Camille alter ego, which I'd always thought all these years was a female, but no. When I was rereading the tour program where he sets out who Camille is, this character that gets taken over by this spooky electric character, this demonic figure that wants to mind control people with his beats. No, it's a he, but with a lady's voice. So again, you see that in Prince, in his alter egos as well. So
these alter egos battle with one another. And, you know, this is a topic that has been slowly bubbling to the surface. And I like to share with people, one, if you want to understand trauma-based mind control and its methods, then watch The Butterfly Effect with Ashton Kutcher. It is a guidebook to trauma-based mind control. You could set it side by side with Fritz Springmeier, Cisco Wheeler's book, and you'll see that Butterfly Effect, which is based on, alludes to Aleister Crowley's Moonchild book, which is known as the Butterfly Net. And of course, then the butterfly being the symbol of monarchs, now the monarchs are a symbol of generational memory. So all of this ties together, and realize that we have now raised this topic of trauma-based mind control and multiple personality, or DID association, what they're calling it now, you know, DID, disassociation identity disorder, is now so popular that Steven Spielberg is able to put out a television show, The United States of Tara, which is kind of a play on how George Bush would say Tara. And the United States of Tara, they basically ask you, which alter would you prefer to be? And they make it a positive to have these multitude of beings inside of you to help you out of these different situations. So, you know, we've gone from MK Ultra being this ultra secret CIA operation, which we all know about, and throw in Project Artichoke if you want to get more into the Hollywood scene, and then MK Ultra into Monarch programming, and then it's now a television series by Steven Spielberg, who just happened to be at the Boston bombing, and, you know, come on.
And Prince kept monarch butterflies in Paisley Park as well, in one of his guest rooms. In a giant dummy. I think it was a gnome or something. I can't remember now. I'd have to like sift through loads of papers to find out. But it's just
which brings me to Shia LaBeouf.
Well, Shia LaBeouf, it's like a yellow body with monarch butterflies inside that just flew in and out of this body with a hole in the middle of it.
Now, just throwing a little more symbolism. Ariana Grande, right? She's a Disney. She's another Disney. I now realize that too. The connection with Disney, Walt Disney Co., and all of these people. All right, they are, Hannah Montana, Miley Cyrus, on down. Yeah, and you can see the high profile rituals coming again and again through these situations and the trauma based mind control.
What was it about Shia LaBeouf you were about to say?
Oh, well, I he's just like next on my list. Oh, I was going to say Ariana Grande, giving you the symbolism as well. So Shia LaBeouf's doing these weird, freaky videos with plenty of blue monarchs and all of that and the symbolism. And then you have Ariana Grande, another Disney that had that video. I can't think of the name of it, but she comes out and she basically battles with an evil sorcerer, casts him into the abyss while stealing the tree of life off his neck. They show reptilians holding humans in cages, and then she takes that Kabbalistic tree of life that she stole off the sorcerer from the abyss, and it is the key for her hyperdimensional flying saucer, and she takes off in this craft. You know, this is how deep and how open all of the signs and symbols are now in the public spectrum.
Right there in plain sight, like an A to Z of symbolism. Right there in a music video. Why is it there? Why would that be? What's that got to do with the music scene?
And I have the same question you do, Mark, is that idea, is it the artist? Or are they placing this stuff on them? And I've been asking artists this for a while. You know, I'm friends with Dan Fogler, who was in the Mars Needs Moms from Disney at the time that it was coming out. While he was filming it, we were filming the film Don Peyote. And so I'm asking him, you know, like these type of questions. Are they guiding you? Are they? Well, it turns out that Mars Needs Moms was like the most least viewed Disney movie ever. Most people don't even know it existed. And what it showed was a feminine militant force living on Mars that threw the boy children away, kept only the women, and would program their bots with these AI technologies. But they would need a mom from Earth to program the AI. And so if you were a really good mom and your child listened to you very well, then they would abduct your mom, suck her brain dry, and send it into their AI robots to control their female military forces on Mars. And then these military forces find the boy children and they discover a cave. They discover the ancient secret of their past, and that was the family unit. The idea of the nuclear family, the core, and this understanding that they had a mom, a dad, a brother, and a sister altered the entire construct of the civilization, freeing the Martians from their feminine military overlords. And this movie was completely marginalized because that is the last thing they want you to know, is that the family core is the solution to this major problem we're dealing with.
And it's right there in the crosshairs of the control system.
And this is why hermaphroditism and pansexuality and all of that is playing so heavily. We predicted that Miley Cyrus would come forward with pansexuality. Pan is their lead god. The book I've been talking about all this interview is called Aleister Crowley and the Hidden God. That's the name of the book, and you will see that Pan is this major god in this symbolism. And so to know that Miley was going to come forward on pansexuality was a no-brainer for us, but, you know, shocking to the rest of the world.
Fellas, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Good time. What is life?